Hey, Justin, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah, sure. What you got?
What do you think about,
No, I saw it last week.
Oh, what about,
Not again.
Oh. How about this?
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So, what did you think of The Sting?
It was a little slow.
A little slow.
But not bad.
I'll take not bad. I'm going to take not bad. All right. So, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we're glad you're here.
Hi.
For those of you joining us for the several many times that we've done this, we're glad you're here.
Hi.
And we really mean that. We're not like one of those, you know, comedians or actors that say, hey, it's really glad to see you.
In checks notes, Cleveland.
When we say it, we're sincere when we say, hey, we're really glad to see you.
It's because we don't get out much.
Well, there is some truth to that. Well, if you've joined us before, you know what this is all about. And if you have not, this is You Want Me to Watch What? A podcast where Justin and I, who have seen thousands of movies between the two of us, challenge each other, recommend to each other, in other ways say, hey, you should watch this movie. You haven't seen it yet.
Yes.
And then we talk about it. Well, one of us usually does the bulk of the talking and the other one chimes in with thoughts and opinions.
I like your shirt.
Thank you.
That is my thought and opinion for the day.
In this case, we are talking about the 1973 movie, The Sting. So, in a time when The Exorcist is also in theaters, those who want something a little less devilish went to see this American caper film.
I hadn't put that together in my head.
It is a movie that deals with two professional grifters, Paul Newman and Robert Redford in this case, who are conning a mob boss, played by Robert Shaw. So the film directed by George Roy Hill, who directed them previously in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Fun fact, they swapped who had the mustache in this movie. So
fair.
But the movie follows basically... Redford's character, Johnny Hooker, who is a grifter who accidentally, with his partner Luther, played by James Earl Jones's dad, accidentally grifts a numbers runner for a local mob boss. And it's enough that the partner, that Luther, he wants to retire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go down south. I'm going to have a boring, mostly legal life.
Yep.
Unfortunately, when you steal $11,000 in 1936 monies from a gangster, he doesn't let that go.
No.
And so after the corrupt police officer confronts Hooker and says, I want $2,000, whether, you know, whatever your cut was, and has given some counterfeit bills, Hooker races to the phone, tries to call Luther to no avail. And gets there to find that Luther has been killed.
Yeah.
Hooker's not terribly bright and not terribly good with money. He had already basically toasted through every single bit of his cut.
In about 12 hours or less.
You know, bought suits, bought flowers, bought, you know, a bunch of champagne and $3,000 on one roll of the roulette wheel. That... was quite obviously crooked.
Yes.
So, when Hooker realizes that he's on the hook and that this mob boss is coming after him, he runs.
Mm-hmm.
He runs to find a guy named Henry Gondorf, played by Paul Newman, who was a once great con man who's in hiding from the FBI. He got caught, well, almost got caught, and decided that retirement and mostly... poverty was better than the slammer.
Yeah.
The hooscow, the pokey. What other? I used all the good ones, didn't I?
Did you say slammer?
I did.
Okay.
That's
then,
how
yeah,
I started.
That, yeah.
All right. Hooker is able to
be sent up the river.
The good
hey.
One. Yeah. Hooker is able to convince Gondorf, I want to con this guy and I want to take him for everything because I don't know enough about killing to kill him. but he killed Luther. Luther was a well-known grifter and a well-liked grifter.
Yes.
And so for this to happen, and Gondorf eventually agrees and starts assembling a team, and they decide they're going to use an obsolete con called the Wire. Basically, betting on horses after the horse race has ended.
Yeah.
But the Mark doesn't know that the horse race has ended.
Yes.
In order to hook the con man, and I loved this whole scene, and this I hear what you're saying about the tempo of things,
mm-hmm.
because this scene just kind of I'm not going to say drags. This scene takes its time in a very methodical way to make Gondorf look like an idiot.
Yes.
The character that he's playing look like an idiot. And well after it's established that everyone thinks he's an idiot.
Yes.
But he basically challenges the mob boss to a game of poker and out-cheats him
mm-hmm.
for like $15,000 in $1936 dollars.
Yeah.
About $65,000
yeah.
in today's money. Hooker acts as a disgruntled employee. And the mob boss, he's after Hooker,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't know what he looks like.
Yeah.
So this whole time that Robert Redford's in the presence of Quint from Jaws, yeah, he's right next to the guy who wants him dead.
Yes.
Anyway, they hook him. And they hook him on being able to out-cheat Gondorf.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it using that wire con. And they're going to do it for $500,000.
Effectively, yeah.
A huge, huge, ridiculous amount of money.
And that's in
1936
money.
Which would be about $10.5 million now.
Yeah. Let that sink in.
Let that sink in. This is not chump change. So Gondorf starts assembling a team of con men. Wonderful scene in the bar, by the way, when the corrupt cop shows back up.
Oh, and, yeah.
And everyone's just like, because the con man comes in and everyone's like, hey, how you doing? What's up, kid? So on and so forth. And then the cop comes in. Everyone's just like very quiet and just studiously eating their stuff. And
yeah.
It's a good moment.
It was a good scene. Yeah.
And the Charles Durning, he plays the corrupt cop, and he was in the Muppet movie.
Yeah,
right?
He was the Colonel Froglegs, whatever his name was. Yeah.
And every time now that I watch him in something, that's who I see first.
You're welcome.
It's half ruined me. Not all the way ruined me, but half ruined me on that. Because, I mean, like, he was also Pappy O'Brien in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, Fun fact, he was a professional dancer.
Really?
Yeah, and choreographer.
Huh.
Yeah. Anyway, played a really good corrupt cop, though.
He did.
So, the corrupt cop is after Hooker as well, because Hooker gave him counterfeit money.
Yep.
And so, eventually, the FBI contacts the corrupt cop, and like, we need you to bring in this Hooker guy because we want him to turn on Gondorf. Mm-hmm. We've been after this guy for a long time. We want him. And you're going to help us. Because if you don't, well, you seem to have a pretty nice place to live and a pretty nice car for a cop.
Yeah.
So all this is going on. And we're skipping over a ton of what's going on back and forth, because there's all manner of double backs and betrayals and so forth that seem to be taking place here, there, and yon. It all comes down into the last scene of the movie, where all of the threads come together, and the Mark is given his bet. He quote unquote interprets it incorrectly.
Yes.
He doesn't. You know, they basically screwed with him. But he places the bet, realizes he's going to lose it, panics. The FBI comes in, you know. Gondorf shoots Hooker. FBI shoots Gondorf. The corrupt cop is told to get the respectable businessman Doyle Lonigan out of the building. They get them all out and everybody laughs because it was all theater.
Yeah.
And it ends effectively with Hooker refusing to get his share of the payout because he did what he wanted to do. He wanted to take this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'll just blow it. Okay. They walk off into the sunset.
Yeah.
By the way, if that bothers you that I just spoiled the ending, it's a 50-year-old movie. You can deal with it.
Yeah.
But there are so many things about this that I like. And we talked briefly before the recording. Characters. Every actor in this.
Yes.
And how many character actors did we count up?
I lost track.
I mean,
a lot.
We're talking a solid dozen and a half.
Yeah.
Easily. That you just walk through and you might not know the name, but then you're going to start picking out the faces.
You know the face, yeah.
It's like, oh, that guy. So good there. I get what you were saying about the slow, because there are scenes that seem to exist mostly to slow down the pace.
Yeah, and I don't understand that. I mean, I'm sure it made sense at the time, but looking at it in 2023, I'm just like, can we move on?
We have gotten used to a much faster rate of storytelling.
Yeah.
Take Avengers, you know, it crammed so much into the 2 hours.
It did, yeah.
Imagine if they took the time to just kind of linger on a shot for, an extra 5 seconds here, 5 seconds. You know, it'd be a 4 hour movie.
It would, yeah.
For the first Avengers movie, and it would change the whole thing. This one, I think of it less as slow and more as measured. It's a very paced movie because then when things happen, they happen quick.
This is true, yes. This is very true.
So you get kind of a very up and down kind of thing. And because you have a much better grasp of how music sets tones and so forth, I want you to talk a little bit about the music after you give me some more insights into the movie itself.
Yeah. Okay. So like I said earlier, it's measured. We'll use that term. It is measured.
Thank you for using my euphemism.
That's a different podcast. But other than that, there's really nothing about the movie that I didn't like. I enjoyed all of the acting that was taking place. The casting was fantastic. Even at the end, the FBI grift had me fooled.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't until both Gondor and Hooker were, quote, dead that I realized, okay, I see what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, they get up and everything's fine. Because I honestly thought, Hooker had been brought in by the corrupt cop and the FBI and told, hey, you turn Gondor over or,
Gondorf.
Gondorf.
Gondor is a place in Middle-earth.
Middle-earth, that's right. Gondorf. And I thought for sure the movie was going to end with the FBI busted into the joint, having the grift already been run, and it's just a shell of a building at that point. You know, they gave them the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
But no, as soon as they busted in and the two main characters died, I'm like, okay, I know what happens now. I get it. I see what you did there.
I'm hip to this job.
I'm hip to this jive, yes. So that, that was all good.
Mm-hmm.
The music was fantastic. It is all ragtime. In fact, the movie starts with Scott Joplin's The Entertainer.
Which, fun fact, in 1974 was just known as the theme from The Sting.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. But every bit of music you hear is ragtime in some fashion. I don't know if it's all Scott Joplin, but it is all Scott Joplin.
Except for two songs. And it's Scott Joplin as basically reinterpreted by Marvin Hamish.
Well, yeah, but it's Scott Joplin.
It's all his rags.
Ragtime. And for the timepiece that the movie is set in, it fits so wonderfully. they didn't try to cram in a 70s pop song or, you know, disco and punk rock, you know, not punk, but, you know, hard rock were kind of coming into their thing in the 70s. And so it would have been very easy and money making to try and slip something like that in, even over the end credits. No, they modernized Ragtime a little bit to make it a little bit more modern, for lack of a better word.
They made it fit.
They made it fit, but they did it respectfully to the music.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me so happy.
Yeah.
So I cannot sing enough praise about the soundtrack to this movie.
It lent the tone.
Yes.
With no pun intended here, but it lent the tone of that light entertainment that this movie seemed to be going for.
Yes.
This isn't heavy drama.
No, it's not. It has some dramatic moments in it, but it is not heavy drama. I will say, I am more likely to listen to the soundtrack than on a whim than to watch this movie again on a whim. But that is not saying that this is not a good movie.
And so I think that's where we kind of end this, is like, this is a definite see it from me. This is one of those early films of my life. I watched it before I understood what I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I still enjoyed what I saw. And it was one of those where, oh, films about old-timey things can be good.
Yeah. From a film historical aspect, see it. Absolutely. If you love film and theater and all that stuff, absolutely see it. If you want to see young Robert Redford and a young-ish
Paul Newman
play off of each other, you know, see it. Absolutely. Just go in understanding that it is going to feel like it's dragging a little bit because it's measured.
It is, like so many things we talk about, a product of its time.
Yes.
Because, and I'm going to say this, it's half of a loaded statement, but only halfway. If you rewatch The Exorcist, which is one of yours and my favorite horror movies.
Mine too, yes.
You know, if you rewatch that without, you know, trying to take away the love that we have for that movie, it is the same kind of boat. There's so much space between what's happening that's like, just get me to the pea soup.
I'm going to argue that, because in a horror film, those long stretches build up suspense because you know something is going to happen, but you don't know when. This, on the other hand, you know a con is happening.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know what part of the con is happening. And it just lingers too long.
I can accept that a bit.
Now, if the sting...
Now, the sting could be shortened by 5-10 minutes and the whole thing flows better.
I absolutely. Absolutely. There are just a few things that you could just cut down, like in the dance hall.
Yep.
For instance, that's all I'm going to say. Watch it and you'll know what I mean. But just trim it down here and there. And instead of a 2-hour and 10-minute movie, just make it a 2-hour movie, including credits, and you're golden.
Mm-hmm. Credits are really good.
Credits are good, yes.
So, okay. So a see it from me. A see it if you like film from you.
Okay. Let me absolutely see this, but go in knowing that it does kind of pace itself measuredly.
Fair enough. So I think it means it's your turn.
Yes, and I've got something.
All right.
Hello, meet Popsicles. Why don't you grab your multipass, a drink, and come sit with us?
Let's pick each other's brain. We want you to be part of our intimate conversation about science fiction topics.
Let's do this. Join us, and let's talk about science fiction topics and books, movies, TV shows, and games.
At Science Fiction Remnant, you are invited to listen in.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And don't forget your multipass.